Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
We have spiking rates, inflation fears, and volatile markets. Not the market for the weak-handed. The trend continues as value crushes growth this year. And our guest today is John Bartleman, president of TradeStation. All this and much more on episode number 706 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Happy birthday to me. My birthday was this weekend and quite the fun was had. I cut open that 50-day-old dry age steak that I've been working on in the fridge in that special dry age bag for some time. And then I slow smoked it, then finished it off by crusting it in a red hot, I mean super hot, cast iron skillet, and then topped it with a wild mushroom ragu. It was a great birthday. Thank you so much for everybody sending in their warm wishes and happy birthday celebratory notes. I really appreciate it. By the way, I'm Andrew Horowitz. If I haven't mentioned that already, I'm the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged, where we have myself and John C. Dvorak going at it each and every Tuesday night live streaming at 9 p.m. over on dhunplugged.com. Or, of course, you can grab it at any podcast directory, depository, app that you have out there. It's there. So lots going on. Again, a great weekend overall. A little bit hoarse from some of the partying that we did over the weekend. But I hope you're having a great week. It has been, I would say, you can't say this lightly, it's been volatile. Markets are seeing the concern about a spike in the rates in the 10-year and the treasury and the whole, the whole yield curve has been moving up substantially. And we've been talking about this for a while. And what's happening now is it's actually becoming a reality where a lot of people were ignoring it for a long period of time, saying, don't worry about the rates. And we have been talking about that. You know, you have to look at valuations as stretched as they are and be concerned that if we see this skew event, this opportunity for rates to really start moving higher very quickly, that there'll be a revisit of the valuations and the concern about where we are compared to where the risk-free rate of return is. As a 10-year rate clicked up this week to 1.75% for a little while there, that's not what markets want to see. Because they're betting on the Fed keeping rates low. They're betting on the opportunity for Powell to control the yield curve. And as such, when that's not happening, even after the FOMC meeting on Wednesday, and when we saw that there was a turnaround on rates and therefore goosed markets pretty substantially, there was a question about that. And the question was, well, is this a one-day wonder where when Fed chairman or the other Treasury officials speak or the other Fed officials speak that it will calm markets? Or is this something that is going to be, well, uncontrollable? That would be the best way to look at it. And even with the volatility that we saw last week and the week before and the week before that, it wasn't the worst week. I mean, we saw this back and forth very closely correlated to bond yields, but you know, it didn't really end too terribly down. Yes, there were areas of the markets that got harpooned. There were some areas that did pretty well. But the big issue right now is that with this kind of volatility, if you're not committed to what you're holding, you're going to get whipsawed around pretty good. So right now, probably more than ever, And when I say more than ever, more than the recent past when we saw that it didn't really matter, a couple of little moves down, a couple of little bit moves up, but the overall trend was from bottom left to top right, where we saw that things were moving higher, and there really wasn't a lot of worry. Even though the VIX has been elevated, the fear gauge, the volatility factors have been elevated, we really didn't see that much volatility until about 3 weeks ago. That's when all this started going on and the concern about yields peaking out. And as you are weak-handed, I'm not talking directly to you, but the concept of being weak-handed is where you buy something like, oh, I'll just buy this for the hell of it. And all of a sudden it moves against you and like, okay, that's enough. I'm not dealing with this. I'm out. And then a day later, you turn around like, well, wait a minute. Look, it's moving up again. Oh, maybe I should get back in. I don't want to miss out on it. And then you get whipped again, back the other direction. And then you just say, the hell with this. I'm not dealing with it anymore. I'm not doing this anymore. I am not involved. I don't want to see it. I'm taking that stock symbol off of my list permanently. That's a terrible idea. It's a terrible way of doing things. The problem is that when you are actively investing, whether it's short-term day trading or even swing trading or looking for an opportunity long-term, and when I say long-term, we're not really talking long-term. I'm not talking about years. I'm talking about a few weeks or a few months to try to get an opportunity to make some money, and you are involved in that kind of volatility where you see the stock move from where you bought it down 15% in a couple of days. That is really going to cause a problem if you are not able to hold on to your position. Now, I am not suggesting, you know me, I'm not suggesting you should necessarily hold on beyond the point of where you are comfortable, where your risk levels are, or where your pocketbook shows the numbers net on your statement. What I'm telling you is, be careful how you get involved in all this. For example, if you had in the past decided that, okay, my unit of measurement of how much I'm going to invest in any particular stock right now is, let's just say, I'm going to use a number, $10,000 per investment, and I'm going to build a portfolio of stocks based on that, and I'm comfortable with that risk. Well, that comfort, that level that you are comfortable with in terms of risk at $10,000 during a time of limited or muted volatility is much different than a time when you have extreme volatility. That $10,000 is probably going to have double volatility. So if you were comfortable taking a 15% loss on that $10,000 investment and then kind of seeing what happens from there, and now all of a sudden that turns into a 25% volatility range, you got a problem. And it's going to make you do things that you don't want to do in your portfolio. So what's the solution? Is it, as I told you earlier, just take that off of your list? No. Maybe think about utilizing a lower initial unit for investing, especially if you're not considering holding on to it through thick and thin. So instead of 10,000, maybe drop it to 5,000 until things calm down, and then build on it as you're finding those opportunities to buy at support. The reason I say this is because right now we're finding that technical indicators are pretty much in play. And with that in mind, there are opportunities that you can give yourself, especially on looking for initial investments in various stocks that give you the opportunity to start when you get to that support level. So just think about if you are in that boat right now that you said, hey, I don't really care about volatility. And all of a sudden, a few months later, you're like, well, maybe I do care about volatility. Maybe I do care about where the range is right now with my portfolio. So it may be smart to cut back on some of those positions. I've talked to a lot of people that have some of the ETFs that are in play right now that have been just, well, trashed over the last couple of months. Since the beginning of the year in particular, when we're seeing some of the high flyers really get into problematic areas. So just think about adjusting that. Now, I think it's important to talk about what is really going on in the markets and why rates have been moving up, because it's not just all about the inflation expectations, which is something, of course, that's important. That's something that is playing right now. But one of the things that we've been watching is something called the supplemental leverage ratio, the SLR, which is probably one of the key reasons that we're seeing this incredible move in rates in such a short period of time. Because it has been a flood of treasuries for sale over the past few weeks by primary dealers that have forced rates higher. And the question is whether this is all we're going to get. If we look at rates moving higher, is this it? We know the Fed is committed to keeping rates low until 2023 with their ultra uber dovish stance. And we also have to think about, well, what are the reasons why inflation is going to start to kick up? And we're going to get to that in a minute. But staying on the rate issue for a second, there was this great summation of the SLR, the supplemental leverage ratio, from briefing.com this week. And I'm going to read it to you because I think it says it all right here. So bear with me on this. So they wrote that the Federal Reserve announced a short time ago that the temporary change to the supplemental leverage ratio, or SLR, issued on May 15th, 2020, will expire as scheduled on March 31st. Briefly, the temporary change enabled depository institutions to exclude Treasury holdings when calculating their SLR, the thinking being that it would promote more flexibility to provide credit to households and businesses during the depths of the pandemic. The U.S. economy is no longer in those depths. So as a practical matter, it is understandable that the Fed will let the exemption expire. Banks have reportedly been bracing for this possibility by offloading treasuries in recent weeks. This is where it's really important to understand what's going on with the bonds and the yields. According to Bloomberg, primary dealers have unloaded $80 billion of treasury securities in just the last 2 weeks. That selling has contributed to the uptick in long-term rates, so it's understandable that there has been some knee-jerk selling interest in the Treasury market following the announcement by the Fed today. That was Friday. The yield on the 10-year note, which flirted with 1.67% over 9, came in to test 1.72%. As it did, equity futures were rolled back over. That happened at about 9:15 in the morning on Friday. Approximately. I remember watching, all of a sudden the NASDAQ futures were up like 60, and all of a sudden you turn for a second to blink and you look back and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Why are they even to down now? So this SLR, this idea of what is going on with the Fed of removing a temporary measure was telegraphed. It was known. And action was taken to dispose of the treasuries that were on the books. And they need to get their balance sheet squared, anybody that was using this, potentially. And the rate moves could have been advance of the deadline. And now that we have more clarity, by the way, so if you understand what Briefing was talking about, they were saying that, hey, you know what? We knew this was happening. Okay, fine. We had an idea of this. Maybe markets felt that this was going to happen. They were pricing it in. But I think now that we have more clarity, it's possible that, well, rates can stabilize. Now, it may not be immediately, but if it does, that would be good for the growth side of the equation again, and tech and higher multiple stocks can pick up from where they left off, because they're lagging pretty substantially. Now, we have to contend with the other issue, though. So we compartmentalize the issue of, okay, why was the selling going on? How was there this really significant rate rise? One thing could be that there was some additional pressure on sales, thereby raising rates until we got the final announcement, and then another 10 days until we get this all cleaned up, let's say, because of the deadline. Now, the other side of the equation is the reality of inflation. And yeah, we are going to see a significant pickup in year-over-year inflation rates in the coming months. And it just makes sense if you think about why that is. Because there was this significant deflationary trend a instantaneous drop during the year ago period, like February through April 2020, as the lockdown started. And now the year-over-year comparisons are going to come in, and it's going to get pretty wild because we're going to see this low base comparison for inflation. So we see the monthly, and plus 2.02, and you analyze that, it's, you know, somewhere about 2.4%, 2%, 2.5%, 1.8%, depending on what month you look at and what series you look at. However, now when we start giving the real numbers and we start with a very, very significant cut to the inflation rate back in February, March, April 2020, and now we start looking at year over year when those come in, it's going to get pretty substantial. The question is going to be if markets are going to be able to discern whether or not this is simply a statistical anomaly that it is, this comparison from a low base, or if they can look through that and say, okay, let's continue to look where we are month over month and how that's going to play out. And if that ticks up, taking into consideration where we were and where we are now, or are we going to be in a straight line up for prices? Are we going to see that prices for lumber, commodities, for markets, for foods, for autos, for, I mean, list goes on and on, education, healthcare, are all those prices going to continue up substantially for a very long period of time? And if that is the case, well, then we might as well see rates moving towards the 2% range. I will tell you that probably before we get there, there's going to be a reality check on the markets because of the significant move, this parabolic move that we've seen in rates over the last several weeks, last couple, 3 months. And the reality that there's a lot of funding going on for the stimulus and possible infrastructure programs, not to mention all the bonds that the Fed is going to buy. They don't want to be buying these bonds, and the government doesn't want to be selling these bonds at really much higher rates than they are because the cost factors are substantial. Bottom line is this is all very important for markets right now. And I think there's a very good chance, a likelihood that markets are overreacting somewhat. You know, I've been talking about valuations for a long time, and I still think that rates are low enough. We'll call it in the 1.5 to maybe 1.6 plus or minus range to reasonably support some of these valuations, assuming that we're going to see numbers that come in the next earnings or next few quarters that are consistent with what we've seen before. However, even with earnings growth and earnings coming in, moving nicely higher over the next number of months, if we continue to see that there is going to be pressure on treasuries, pressures on the bond price and yields moving higher, all bets are off. That's what we need to be watching for right now. Keep an eye on it. As we'll keep on reporting back where we are, what we see. But a lot of Fed talk coming up this week, so probably going to be talking down rates the best that they can. All right, let's get on with the next segment, which is a guest we have, which I think you'll really enjoy. Let's get right to that. Let's dial him in and get that going right now. And our guest today is an old friend, John Bartleman, and serves as the president of TradeStation Group and is a member of its board of directors. Prior to those roles, John was vice president of brokerage operations, chief growth officer of TradeStation Group, and vice president of product management of TradeStation Securities. John, hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Listen, we go back a long time, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I know, and I've been, as everybody knows that he listens to me on a regular basis, I am a big fan of TradeStation and all the things they can do for so many different reasons. But I thought actually what we'd do today is go back in time and kind of look at the history of TradeStation from where it was in the beginning that many people may remember once you mentioned kind of some of what it was in the past to where it is now. And they're like, oh, yeah, I remember that program. To kind of what's happening today, because I know you've done so many things in terms of changes and enhancements. So kind of give me a brief history of TradeStation.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an incredible story with TradeStation. It's one of the original, you know, fintech stories. So the company was founded in the mid-1980s by Bill and Ralph Cruz in Miami. These guys, when they came out of college at UM, they got into futures trading. And, you know, they found themselves making a lot of money really quickly and with dreams of, you know, early retirement and buying really nice cars. They instantly lost it all. Yeah. And like everyone else that's tried this, you know, this is not easy. So they went on a mission back then. It's an amazing time when you think computers are just coming around. They said, no, you know what, we're going to work with our computer science friend and we're going to design a system that will allow me to test my ideas on the market before I put my money to risk. And see how that my ideas would work. So they went out and built what was originally called System Writer, later became Easy Language, and it allowed them to program their ideas. They had to go out back then and find market data and clean the market data. But this is back when people were literally hand-drawing charts and patterns. So it was really revolutionary at the time. And they were really one of the first retail charting packages. So really incredible as they started building TradeStation out, adding these capabilities. We became a favorite of a lot of hedge funds, you know, built their business on the back of this and building their models. I joined the company in 1999. So at that point, we were just launching TradeStation 2000i. So I joined as they were forming a new product management team. I joined that team. So, you know, it's an exciting time to be there. You know, immediately as soon as I got on the ground, they basically said, all right, you're going to go travel the country and teach people about Options Station. I'm like, all right, I have no idea about options, but okay. So, you know, that was fun. But back then that software was shipped on CDs. You had to get your own market data from a data source and clean the data. It was a real nightmare. So the company went out and purchased a company called Window on Wall Street in Richardson, Texas. That gave us a ticker plant. So we had the market data then automatically included. They also had an online web-based delivery platform for their software that we took. So now we were able to deploy TradeStation via the web, so you didn't have to use diskettes anymore. And we had to market data. So it solved a lot of the customer pain points, but the piece they were missing was the automated trading. Plus, the financial model of a software company was not as good as actually being a broker, because our traders were actually, our customers were E-Trade's best customers. So the Cruz brothers purchased another company in Boca called onlinetrading.com. And we integrated that capability into TradeStation. So now you saw an end-to-end automatable product. So you could backtest your ideas. Yeah, you optimize those ideas and you could automate those directly all in one seamless system. So really incredibly revolutionary. And the product was so deep for the analytics, the backtesting and the optimizations you could do. Really, really outstanding. So we really built that brokerage and the capabilities out through, you know, like the 2000s. And then in 2011, the company was sold to Monex Group. So it was part of a you know, really interesting opportunity to grow the business globally.
That was 10 years ago. That was 10 years ago. Oh, my gosh.
10 years ago. I know, it's crazy. That's how fast things evolve. And, you know, being through all these generations of this company has been really incredible. So, you know, at that point, I took over, you know, marketing and support and sales and education as well as product. So as the chief growth officer and really starting to expand this company globally with Monex, we took it was award-winning technology. We had just won the Barron's Award number one that year. We basically took that technology into Japan, customized and localized it for the Japanese markets and launched TradeStation in a whole new place. And with that work we did, we were able to then leverage it in China and South Korea, where we've now come back to our roots and become a software vendor to broker dealers in those markets, providing TradeStation's front end for trading Chinese markets or South Korean markets. So it's an interesting dimension that we added to that. So go ahead.
What was the first name of the MegaChart, SuperChart? The
SuperChart was the original, you know, retail box that was sold.
It was a box. I remember. It was a big fat box with all sorts of stuff in it.
Yeah. And with your disc, and you would buy it at a retail store. I mean, I even forget the name of the stores. It was back then. It wasn't even Circuit City. It was before those days. Mm-hmm. You know, you would buy
Comp
yourself.
USA.
Yeah, Comp USA. Yeah, those guys. There was incredible, incredible change in, you know, in these markets. And, you know, so after we got acquired by Monex there, built out this international system, really came back and looked at the U.S. business and said, and this was after 08 now, you had, you know, interest rates at zero, volatility had dried up. Really terrible environment for us as a business model. Monex put me in place to take over as president of TradeStation Group and start to grow the company here in the U.S. So, you know, really focused on how do we expand TradeStation's brand to attract not just day traders, which at that point the day trading market had dried up, you know, to more, you know, less sophisticated customers, more investors. So how do we do that? So we really reinvented the brand, invested heavily in web and mobile technologies, and started our expansion efforts. And that started working great. And now we talk about getting into like 2019, actually earlier, 2017, 2018, we started really focusing on crypto, right, wanting to get into this space. We had learned about it actually way back in 2014 as members of the MIT Media Lab. Remember this young team coming in and telling us about blockchain and Bitcoin, and we're all like, you got to be crazy. No one's going to accept this stuff. So, but, you know, lo and behold, a few years later, of course, yes, we needed to do it. So we built out an entire crypto operation. Like we had each other asset class we've added over the years. We had to learn it, build out a system, find the technologies. And this is at a time when the crypto space really was not mature. And those businesses, they, you know, you had these exchanges that were operating as brokers, and they weren't following the same market structure that we see in the equities and futures space. So we had to find technology partners and others that could help us stand this up in a way we're used to in our markets to get a robust product offering out to customers. So right. It took us a little while, but yeah, we were able to launch that late 2019. And now here we are, you know, after COVID, you got a re-ignition of the retail trading market with COVID and commission-free trading and the explosion in cryptocurrencies. So really an exciting journey that right. we've been on. And it's been a real interesting opportunity for me to learn along the way.
I'm like a bucking horse trying to stay on top of it with all the different things. But I want to go back a little bit and talk about just the core TradeStation for a moment, because, you know, these days it's easy for a lot of people just to think that, well, hey, that guy mentioned that stock, or, you know, oh, futures doing this, or, hey, let's grab this option and click on it on a phone and just buy it without any analysis at all, which is okay for a brokerage, right? Because you get the flow and you get, you know, whether it's a commissionable transaction or not. But for those people who are more interested in a discipline, which is my audience, which, you know, deals with a variety of different topics, whether it's fundamental analysis, whether it's quantitative screening, whether it's charting. I mean, obviously, one of the things that I did when I first was working with some systems, I had Bloomberg for a long time, and always used TradeStation, by the way, for the signals and for tracking and for the charting and for the pricing, along with, let's say, Bloomberg for the fundamental data. And what I found was that was a great combination, because Bloomberg's charts were very difficult. They were very cumbersome. But more important was the idea that with TradeStation, I could actually program. And while I have some pretty good time under my belt with programming on Easy Language, the fact of the matter is that what's really great is if anybody wants to take apart, let's just start with something very simple and very basic, but you want to look at, okay, what's the components of a moving average and how is it actually programmed?
Yep.
You can actually open up a pre-canned moving average and say, well, that's great. I just want to color it. Let's say if it's sloping up, sloping down, whatever you want to do, you could do things inside of Easy Language. That's an important part of what TradeStation offers, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was the backbone of what we did and the customization and capabilities we provided our customers to really test practically any idea you could think of, you could try, whether it was fundamental or technical. You know, it's incredible, you know, and then optimizing those strategies. But for a novice, I mean, we called it Easy Language because it was in easy, you know, English-like statements. It's not as difficult as software programming generally. To get the basics down. So like you said, I want to look at a moving average. I can easily read that and I could replicate that. Obviously, it gets more complicated when you're getting into strategies and more complex, you know, quantitative analysis.
I mean, the thing is that what's really kind of interesting also is that you can, we'll call nesting, right? So you want to do multiple moving averages and get a signal and only show, there's something called show me's, there's indicators, there's shows, show me, There's you know, things like just looking at bar coloration and painting. There's all sorts of little things you can do, and actually most of them work either or. But for example, let me just kind of give a visual for a second to listeners, is that if you want to show, let's say, a stock that is simple candlesticks on a chart, and you want to say just very simply, show me when it is above its 50-day moving average and it's above its 200-day moving average, as an example, right? So you could very simply put those two things in, nest them, and then say, okay, when that happens, paint the bar pink. That's it. Yep. So now you're looking at a chart. You just kind of looking across the chart. You don't have to see any lines, anything on there besides just the price. And all of a sudden, you see a pink bar. And when it's pink, as an example, if you're using that as a simplistic methodology, that if it's not pink for a while and all of a sudden goes pink, that's a buy signal, as an example. And you could visually see it. But more importantly, you could theoretically throw that into a strategy and then test and back test that to see if this is a viable strategy to utilize. Because your strategy reports, your output reports are extraordinarily detailed.
Yes. Yes. They'll give you the full gamut of analysis of how well that idea would have worked. So yeah, it's incredible. And we have, you know, a large, you know, really strong customer base of people who love, you know, tinkering with trade, with easy language and, you know, trying to find that holy grail of a strategy. It's, you know, it's an incredible tool for people to figure out and learn. And, you know, over the years, we've greatly enhanced easy language. We added object-oriented programming to it to give you the capability of developing much more powerful techniques with it, development techniques, as well as building complete applications on the TradeStation platform. So, yeah, it's really amazing. So someone that wants to be able to really test what they're doing, it's an outstanding tool.
The other thing is, and not to totally toot our horn over here in terms of the trigger charge stuff that we have, because we do have the number one highest rated overall indicators in the trading app store over at TradeStation. But what's cool about this is that opened up the opportunity, the trading app store opened up the opportunity for developers to come in and say, hey, you know what? We think we have a really good mousetrap here in terms of futures or in terms of stocks, or maybe somebody that built something that's totally outside the box to look at, you know, fundamental analysis, whatever it may be. And you have an array of developers that have put in their indicators and their programming that is available either sometimes for free or for purchase that is an easy add-on right into the trade. It's all encompassed into the TradeStation platform. What was your feeling on why you wanted to do that?
Well, we have a couple of things. So we did have a large you know, cottage industry of, as you said, third-party developers who would create this really amazing analysis, and they would be out building websites and selling those products directly to our customers through their website. And they would have to manage the payments, the distribution, and the security of that code. But looking at that market and saying, look, you know, we at that point in time, the Apple App Store had just come out, and we're like, you know, this is a great model. Let's take on the burden for the developers and provide a better experience for them and for our customers to, you know, to be able to find these great analysis techniques or strategies that are created and available and make it seamless in the platform for both the customer to use and pay for. And then we handle all the back office technology for the developer. So we collect the payments, we handle the security of the code and so forth. So it was just a win-win for everybody at that point.
I mean, I've seen some of the other ones out there, some of the other ways to do this with all sorts of interesting installations and then checking against databases. And from a developer standpoint, it's very cumbersome, but also from a user standpoint, I'm trying to think of other platforms that I can think of. I don't think I know any that it's as easy to try, because a lot of these things are like a 10-day or 20-day free trial to try out all of these and kind of see what you like in terms of quick install. And then if you don't like it, you just get rid of it.
Yep.
So that's
pretty simple. And I've not seen it out there in the market the way we've done it either. Yeah. It's a pretty unique offering. The challenge we have now is how do we take that from our, you know, TradeStation flagship desktop platform into more of a web and mobile world where a lot of new customers, as you said earlier, you know, they're coming in, they're installing your app on the mobile device and they're just placing trades. They're not going to sit there and learn how to program easy language. So how do we, you know, get this technology to scale to that customer base and that type of use case?
So that's a good question. That's a great segue into the new investor or the new paradigm for how to utilize any application, right? It's kind of funny, by the way, a side note, you watch TV these days. Do you see how many apps are advertised on television? It's either an app or some kind of drug.
Yep, exactly.
That's all it is. And every app seems to be just something of the past that has been modernized to make it easy to buy pet food or some erectile dysfunction drug.
Right. So, yeah. So we see, you know, I really saw an extension of our customer base into two directions. One was this retail customer who's not really interested in programming, but they're used to these very simple apps that are now out there, whether it's Facebook or whatever. We call it in-house liquid expectations. I mean, it's just simple, easy to use. I know how to get in there. I don't want to program anything. So how do you customize trade ideas for that customer where they want to explore and would buy into that idea? And then on the other side, you have the more advanced developers, the quants that are coming out of college now that are trained on Python. They don't want to learn easy language. They want to develop in Python. So for that group, we've had to go out and build really robust APIs. So we have a great web services API that we can expose to developers that if you're developing your code in Python, you want to do that, you can automate directly into our API to your TradeStation account. So we're kind of looking at both dimensions as these kind of spaces evolve.
Is the industry going towards a no software model? I mean, we've kind of gone back and forth, right? You know, it was everything is on when I remember in high school, my first computer class was, I don't even know, I think it was COBOL maybe, or something. I think it was COBOL. Basically it was the entire first semester was how to log in, and that was the test.
Yeah.
You know, that's all we learned was how to log in. Every day you'd practice logging into something. But those were dummy machines, right? Those were the green screens that just attached to some kind of server. And these were just dummy machines. Then everything went to the PC. And now everything's kind of making a U-turn back to the cloud.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why, you know, we're looking at how do we, you know, have these strategies, quant models, whatever you want to call these, server side that are running in a cloud that can feed the results to the customer, and the customer can then just choose to subscribe to that that portfolio, for example. It's very common in the RIA space with, you know, model marketplaces. So you're getting access to these professional models. We're looking to extend our capabilities and provide that same functionality for retail developers and investment professionals to be able to expose their models to our customers.
Well, what's also interesting about that is from a company standpoint, updates happen on the fly. There's no reason to do a download and update. It's just simply going out and just logging into something anywhere, by the way. No longer do I have to have this on one machine or one device. I can just log in from anywhere, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they want simplicity. It needs to be uncomplicated. I need to be able to get myself stood up without having to call support.
Yeah,
and that's the world we find ourselves in, having to retrofit a lot of this legacy technology to be that simple. It's quite a challenge.
But I guess I keep on coming up to the point. Does everything, you know, do what do we lose by doing that? I mean, the potential for loss.
Well, it's how to expose the tinkering capability that, like, we have in the TradeStation platform and Easy Language, where someone can actually try to figure this out. How many people want to spend the time to learn that and to mess around with the product? It's somewhat of a different mentality. People are really quick. I just want my answer now. Easy button. Let me go.
Right. So let's kind of segue into crypto, because I know that's your latest thing that you've really spent a lot of time working on. And when futures came out, you were working with that. You're working with a select grouping of call them core currencies or cryptocurrencies, the big names out there. Are you seeing a big take up in user desire to trade these instruments?
Yes. On the pure crypto side, absolutely. It's been an explosion since crypto started moving back in August, September of last year. And coming through December, it's just been a whole nother universe for us. But we started, as you said, back, a couple of years back, we were day one supporters of the futures contracts for Bitcoin, and then most recently for Ethereum. And with the pure crypto offering that we launched now, you know, supporting Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Litecoin, Ethereum, and now USDC, we're starting to see a real big uptake in customer demand for this and volumes. So it's been interesting because we weren't quite sure how many of our existing customers would be interested in trading this versus how many new customers we could bring into the TradeStation ecosystem. And it's really been a mix. I would say up front, it was a lot of new customers. Now we're getting a lot of conversions. And we have a really interesting product offering now, which we call on top of the crypto, we provide crypto earn. So this is an interest rate that we're able to pay our customers for their assets. So just like sitting at a bank when you're getting an interest rate, we can provide, for example, on your USDC balances, right now we're paying 6%. And that's something that's accruing daily and paid out monthly. So it's compounding. So it's versus a bank account, this is a significant higher yield, which, we're starting to market and educate our customers on, you know, what is this product? How are you getting this much interest? What does this even mean? So
can you tell me those things? I have those questions. Can you tell me, can you explain to me? I mean, 6% is not only above market from a bank account, it's above market from a bond, it's above market from general loans, and it's above market even in the high yield space.
Yep, absolutely. So we somewhat equate this to what we do on the securities side with our securities lending business. So TradeStation provides interest sharing for any of your securities you may be holding on margin or fully paid. If you're in our fully paid lending program, we'll pay you an interest rate on that. And we're doing that because we're lending out the securities to short on the other side. On the crypto space, it's very similar. There's an enormous market now for cryptocurrencies to be borrowed. So we built out an entire lending platform and we brought on board many counterparties here. So what we're able to do is if you have crypto assets with it, we can lend those assets out. And we do this on an over-collateralized basis. So if we lend out your USDC, for example, we're going to bring in more than that amount by generally 125 to 150% in Bitcoin as collateral. And we have a risk management system that we're able to monitor the price of Bitcoin. So if that price drops, we're able to have a risk management system and make the right margin calls to our counterparties to become whole and make sure we protect at all times our customers' balances, firms' balances. So that's sort of the dynamics behind the scene. Now, this is not an FDIC insured product. It's not a SIPC insured product. It is a different business as part of TradeStation Crypto. So you are trusting TradeStation as a group, to stay solvent, obviously, and to do the right things with this lending network. So that's the challenge, is getting people educated on this. And, you know, TradeStation does have insurance on its cold wallet technology. So we use BitGo as our cold storage solution and our warm storage solution. And we're in the process of acquiring insurance on our warm storage as well. So these are things we can market and explain to our customers, but it's still it's a learning curve. So that's sort of the big picture of what this product is. And we'll see where the market goes. It's like, this isn't an introductory rate. This is the real rates we're able to get with the demand that's out there in the crypto space to borrow USDC.
So who's on the other side that's giving me the 6% or you're taking a slice of it. So who's giving me the 8% or whatever the number is, who's on the other side of that?
So there's multiple parties, but you have a lot of firms now in the crypto space, whether crypto mining or various crypto operations where they're long Bitcoin. They're not selling that Bitcoin, but they need dollars.
Right.
So they're willing to put up their Bitcoin as collateral to get dollars, whether it's to cover operational costs or to speculate on markets. You know, a lot of these are large trading houses. So there's different counterparties with different reasons, but it's a growing space. I mean, just exploding.
Now, could you use the USDC? Is there a sister product for other coins like an Ethereum or Cash?
Yeah. So, well, Ethereum, do you mean like the interest payments we do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we are paying 1% on Ethereum and we're paying 0.25% on Bitcoin Cash and Litecoin at this point. But like those are variable based on the demand for the underlying cryptocurrency in the lending market. So right now it's heavy demand for USDC.
So USDC, all I have to do is have a crypto account at TradeStation, deposit X amount of dollars, and then essentially don't do anything.
Exactly. Put that into USDC and let it sit there and you'll see on our screen your interest accruing daily. Hmm. So it's incredible. I mean, at that rate, it's an interesting product. So now you've heard all these firms now starting to put their firm capital in Bitcoin. That's interesting. We understand the need and that's a desire. And we are working with firms now to help them do that, as a treasury function, which is a whole new business line for us. But explaining to these firms and these treasurers about USDC is new. They don't know about this product. So again, it's a interesting opportunity, and it comes down to the education and the marketing to get people aware of this.
Is there any concern of yours about the recent ban of Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies in India that is being discussed? The idea of holding, mining, buying, selling is going to be totally and at least what they're talking about right now, outlawed by in the next 6 months.
Yeah, I think that may be temporary from what I'm reading there. It's kind of mixed messages, but that hasn't had a direct impact on us. I mean, definitely you saw the impact it had, at least for a few days, on Bitcoin. So those don't worry us a ton, but there is absolutely evolving regulatory scrutiny across the world. Obviously we're most focused here in the US, where even our regulatory environment is evolving. And we're hoping with the new administration, we get more clarity on where this is going. So
that's a big thing. That what you just discussed is really a big thing right now. Everybody's talking about the idea of regulatory initiatives that will bring clarity and almost looking at it as a thumbs up, right? Saying that we need to know, is this a security? Is this not a security? What's the taxation of it? Who can hold it? You know, all the different things. And it seems like the assumption is that it's going to create, as you mentioned, clarity versus onerous regulatory negative impact on the cryptos. That's kind of that's what everybody's thinking, right?
Yeah, because all of us in this space, I mean, we work in a highly regulated area on the security side with the SEC and FINRA, and on the future side with CFTC and CME. So we're used to the scrutiny, but you want that clarity. And on the crypto side, it's just we want to do things right. But at the same time, we want to innovate. So, you know, we got into this market and we were supporting XRP along with everyone else. When the SEC came in and said that's considered a security, so we have to stop trading that one. Okay, that's great. But what else is going to be impacted?
Right. That was a weird deal. That Ripple was a weird deal.
Yep.
On how that all happened. So let's kind of segue into options and why options trading has become so popular now. And is this really the result of the Robin Hoods and eToros of the world gamifying the whole and glorifying by giving you tokens and trophies and stars and social discussion of the whole idea of investing?
I think there may be some of that, but you know, we saw just a huge explosion in options over the last, let's say, 8 to 10 years. But yes, so since Robinhood really came onto the scene, and they engaged with a younger trader who's just coming into the space, and these are not wealthy people. They may have $1,000 or $5,000, and they want to turn that into $10,000 or $50,000. So they're willing to make bets on small price stocks or options. So they get exposed to an option and you get greater leverage with that. So you can, with a few hundred dollars exposure, get yourself a good return if the market moves in your favor. So we saw a lot of that, and we're seeing that now. So with the Reddit explosion and everything that's happening, we are definitely seeing, just like everyone else, a younger, less sophisticated trader coming in and experimenting and trying to figure out the markets. And that's one of the reasons we focus quite a bit on education, why we're building our You Can Trade
community. I want to talk about platform. That. You got ahead of me on that, because I want to talk about that. But for a second, I appreciate that you are the president of a brokerage and a trading operation, but do you really think that when everybody goes back to work, they don't have stimulus checks, do you think the young investor is going to have that much time on their hands to just sit there all day watching their phone and then clicking buttons?
Yeah, I do. I think we've tapped into a new generation first that's now getting exposed to this and likes what they're seeing. I think commission-free, it wasn't just COVID that did this. The commission-free movement really created a wave and momentum for these people to get into the space that we had seen initially. So TradeStation has a program called TradeStation Salutes, where we were providing commission-free trading to military members, first responders for the last several years. That audience of people we were able to see traded significantly more than people that were not on that plan. So we knew the impact was there. We just didn't know the scale. And when we saw the industry go to this, it's just, I think, an explosion that's created this new mentality. So I think this is more here to stay. And with the mobile trading you have now, it's very easy to trade on the go. I can be sitting in a meeting watching the markets. No one knows what I'm doing. So I think that's here.
I hear you on that. I really do wonder about productivity in the future of people, right, that have the availability. There's got to be like a skiff, you know, a room where you go into for a meeting and you focus versus or even have a no phone zone.
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely. Yeah. And now with the work from home, it's tough because you don't know what someone's doing on the other side.
No idea what somebody's doing. No, I mean, it's you know, they could be doing stuff and just I was talking to my wife. She says, yeah, I got to do all these reports. I got to put up the stuff. I said, why don't you just like schedule that stuff to go when you're doing it? And everybody thinks you're working during the day.
Right.
Make it happen. But let's talk about education and training, because this idea of people getting involved in it, we also know that traders can get hurt over time if the markets are not working in their favor. And right now we've had a very cooperative market, cooperative Fed, cooperative government with sending out money to everybody, $1,400 checks about to hit your mailbox anytime now. But education has got to be an important aspect of what you do. And you see this really with a lot of other firms too, really cranking up the whole educational aspect. It's not only from an introduction of maybe somebody doesn't know about options or doesn't know about futures or doesn't know about crypto, but giving that education. And you recently brought in and really started working with a much higher level of education with a firm that you bought called You Can Trade.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, education is enormous. Everyone's, as you said, getting involved in this. And I would say our number one customer question or request is, I don't know what to trade. Can you help me? Now, you know, we're not a registered investment advisor, so we don't provide advice. But at the same time, we do need to educate customers on how to use our tools, but really about the markets, about the risk, how to deal with risk management, some of the strategies. So, and we'd always had a very robust education offering, and we had a large network of third-party educators that we would bring on, have speak to our customers, but it was a little bit convoluted and really wasn't centralized around our brand. So with the concept of You Can Trade, we wanted to be able to create a platform where we could, one, create a community, have a social network, like you've seen elsewhere in the space. There's multiple of these coming up. But we wanted to also have a platform which we could bring educators into the forefront and let our customers choose the right coach for them. Who's going to help me? I mean, we all have, you know, whether it's a physical trainer, you may have a executive coach or so forth that's helping you. You really need a trading coach. You need someone that you can follow, learn from, ask questions, as well as a community of people that are doing the same thing you're doing. So that's really the spirit of what we're doing with You Can Trade. At this point, we've scaled it out to 6 channels. And we're continuing to add on new coaches and new channels for different types of trading, different asset classes. And we've launched our community on the mobile app. But what we found is over the last 2 years, as we built this in crypto, it's a bit piecemealed. We have You Can Trade separate and from TradeStation's website. Mm-hmm. We have crypto a little bit separate. So our initiative right now is to collapse all that together into TradeStation's website and mobile apps in a very simplified and integrated experience. So it's a lot easier for people to find it. But I think this is a transformative piece of our business if we can scale this to really give people the education that they need and the community and the information. I mean, there's so many things out there that people are learning, and you have communities like TradingView. They're huge partners of ours. They got a massive community. We have tied in with them with our API. So our customers that prefer to use TradingView, we want them to have the best brokerage experience on that platform trading with us. So they can do that. And we're okay with that piece. And then we'll share our You Can Trade content onto that platform. And you have other platforms like eToro and StockTwits, a lot of trading communities that are formed that are great, wonderful places for people to connect and learn. We're just trying to create a version that can cater to our customers.
Right. Plus you have your relationships with like a Benzinga.
Yep,
my friend, absolutely. My good friend Jason Raznick, who I think I helped introduce them to you actually years ago, Jason. But you know, there's a lot going on there, and I think all these pieces, and of course, we had Sarah Potter on not too long ago on the podcast as well, who is the You Can Trade founder, original founder. So a lot going on there. Well, John Barlowman, TradeStation. You know, I mean, I can't say enough. Seriously. I mean, that's what we use. Everybody knows when we put a chart up, when we send it on Twitter, when people see what we do, they know we have the Friday morning pre-market updates and all that that goes on. I love it. Seriously. This is not a product sale. I'm just telling you a fact that's what it is. I mean, we use it all the time for all sorts of things, always, you know, developing, but if nothing else, the other thing is the data is good. It's fast. That's the big issue, you know, and over the years, by the way, it's gotten faster.
Yes.
Which is really good. But anyway, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. John Barlowman,
TradeStation. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. I'll see you soon.
Bye.
As always, I learn a lot from our guests as well, because I didn't know some of the long-term history of TradeStation, plus some of the things they're doing right now in terms of the advanced look at what they're doing. Pretty interesting. Overall, I really encourage everybody to check out all the charting capabilities and the trading and crypto and all that over at TradeStation. But anyway, good information. Listen, we're going to keep a watch on rates, because we know that that is going to be a key issue for markets. Again, some of this SLR, the supplemental leverage ratio items that we discussed that have been, well, telegraphed, as we mentioned, are going to be pretty much rolling out and rolling up and finishing with where they were and cutting it back. I don't know if the Fed's going to backpedal on that or not. I don't think they will. They don't think there's any reason to do so, as many of the primary dealers and banks didn't really utilize the idea. The only problem and the concern is that it's just not there. That was used as a backstop. And if we have a liquidity crisis or issue in the markets in the upcoming future, well, that's just one more thing they don't have to use. However, the Fed could just flick a switch at any time. We know that. So we'll keep an eye on that and all the other things that are involved. Listen, thanks for joining me. Thanks for all your birthday wishes and all the things that you sent and the emails, the Twitter items. Follow me, Andrew Horowitz. My name, my spelling, no other changes on Twitter. I'm going to see you again next week. Thanks so much. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.